Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, truly the sun and fun capital of the world. This is Dr. John Stamey, and welcome to ScaryCast. We've got a great show tonight. It's an exciting one. It's July the 4th. Welcome, everybody. I hope you're all out there. Now, it's really funny. You walk outside in Myrtle Beach, and you would think that nobody had ever seen a firecracker. It's just kind of funny. They're going crazy right now. So anyway, that's what we have going on. So we hope we'll all keep our connectivity here. So anyway, I'd like to introduce my co-host from Houston, Texas, Kyler Smith. How are you doing tonight, Kyler?
Doing great, John. Thank you.
Well, we're glad to have you here. And our guest tonight, the very special guest, he's a good friend of mine, been a friend of mine for almost 10 years, and he was actually the first guest on ScaryCast, like 6.5 years ago. I called him up. I said, you want to be a guest on ScaryCast? He said, what's that? I said, it's going to be a legendary podcast. He said, okay. So he came on, we had a good time, and it was a lot of fun. And so I thought I would give him a call because we've been talking some. And I thought I'd give him a call, Kyle Peckham. And I said, why don't you be on the show? I said, I know you got some UFO stories. He said, absolutely I do. So ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls.
I don't know if the call just dropped or not, but thanks for having me back,
guys. How are you doing?
No complaints here. Just waiting for the fireworks to start up in my area off the lake here. North of Charlotte, so they were shooting them off all morning, so just waiting for the fireworks.
That's exactly right, and if we were down here in Myrtle Beach, we would be out on Pier 14. We'd be watching these great fireworks at 10 o'clock. But anyway, we're here tonight, and we're going to have a good time. So Kyle Peckham, you are the man of the hour, and you've got some great UFO stories. Tell us. Start off with one, and then Kyle and I will discuss them with you.
Oh boy! So I'll save the best one. I'll save the best one for a little bit later. But I grew up near. So for a little backstory here, I grew up in a pretty rural area. We had the town airport, and that was it. You know, after 8 o'clock when the airport shut down, there were no planes coming in. And so you kind of get to get used to the traffic patterns and everything like that. And especially when you live a quarter mile down the road from nothing but open farmland where, you know, it's a 20 or 30 minute ride into town. First one that I can actually say legitimately, I don't have an explanation for, was about the summer of 2008. I've always never been able to sleep at night and everything. So just wake up one night, decide to just walk outside. I've always been interested in the stars and everything. So go outside and go to get the telescope out. You know, it's a beautiful, clear summer night. And I look and I'm like, I see something off in the horizon. It just not really thinking anything of it. Just imagining. It's like, okay, well, that's just a plane. Everything got really eerily silent. The home I grew up in was in the middle of the woods. Yeah, you'd hear the frogs, the birds, all the cicadas and everything. But when...
All right, now Kyle, let us know, what town were you near? Near Statesville or what?
So at the time, yeah, we were near the closest, like, big town is Statesville, North Carolina. Where I grew up was closer to Stony Point, which is, if you're anywhere familiar with North Carolina, it's a pretty small town. The nearest thing to there is the Hiddenite Emerald Mine that are famous from there. Really, it's a very sleepy area. Not a lot goes on. You know, everything shuts down by 6 o'clock every night. Really, it was like one stoplight town. That was it. And I was maybe a stone, like I said, a stone's throw from Stony Point. So that gives you the general area. I live right in the Iredell and Alexander County line. So this gives you an idea. I said the closest airfield to there was the Statesville Airport, which, at the time, you know, it was so late at night. You know, I'm not going to discount the possibility of it being air traffic, but what I saw tells me it wasn't a plane. So I go outside, I'm looking, and I'm just staring up at the stars, no big deal. It was kind of like what I always did once a week when I was over in summer. And everything outside, every animal just ceased to, it seemed like they ceased to exist. It was the most eerily quiet thing I've ever experienced. And if you've ever been out in the woods and everything gets really quiet, you know something's wrong. And the rational side of me goes, oh, God, do we have coyotes in the area? You know, what's going on? You stand there, I'm watching, I'm looking, I can't find anything, I got a flashlight looking through the woods, and walk down further into we had a decent-sized horse pasture next door to us, and I walk out into the horse pasture where I get a nice clearing of the horizon, and I look out, and, like, I'm looking due north, and I turn, and I face the east, and I look, and there's, like, this red light blinking on the horizon. That's odd, coming from a direction that doesn't match any of the air traffic that comes to and from out of the airport. So, not thinking of it, I'm just kind of standing there, just wait. It seems like it's coming closer and closer. And then I'm watching it, and it's within view, and I see it's not just a red light. There's like three or four other lights on this. The way to describe this is that it was the stereotypical black triangle. You know, it's already a clear black night out, and you're just like, what the hell is that? Stood there, I watched the thing go from east across to west over the horizon, so I probably had about at least a half mile of clear stretch that I just watched it go from one end of the horizon to the other. This whole thing maybe lasted like 15 minutes. It just moved very slowly, very methodically, and what I thought was a blinking light far away, my assumption was blinking lights, aircraft. Turns out it was hazy that far off, and when it got to the point that I could see it, it was, it was solid. And I'm watching, I'm like, what the fuck is that? And it goes across the horizon, there's not a single sound. It disappears over the horizon, and then the animals start making noise again. And immediately you're just like, what the hell is that? And so that kind of kicked off my fascination with the unexplained and everything. It's like, you see one thing that you can't explain, and you're just like, oh, wow, I need to learn more. And now my personal thought on this one, I'm not going to jump and say that was alien craft, but as getting older, starting to see different stories and everything of government black projects, one of my favorites that I've read across over the years has been the TR-3D. And I'm going to be honest with you, the people that have claimed to see the TR-3D or have an experience or what it's supposed to look like, a silent black triangle that hovers across with like three or four marker lights on it that are solid, sounds pretty damn close to what I saw. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that I know what it was, but I do know it was a UFO because I can't explain what the hell that was. Now, I live, you know, we're what, 4 hours away from Camp Lejeune. I mean, I think there's another military base down in Georgia somewhere near. I mean, we get a lot of we got a lot of military traffic through there. So I got used to seeing Black Hawks and every now and then seeing an Apache fly through, but I've never seen anything like that. And that was kind of the first one that kicked everything off. That's So it had to have happened. I think it was in between like 3 and 4 a.m. or something like that. Like, you think about it, there was nobody outside, you know, nobody on the roads. It was just one of those things where you're just left with more questions than answers.
Right. And I understand all about that. Do you have any questions or comments for Kyle?
Yeah, actually, as soon as you said, like, the triangular, you know, figure that multiple people say they've seen before, I've heard so many reports about that, and they have plenty of documentaries on it. And like you said, like, you see something and you want to know more about it. So that's what I did. Yeah, as soon as I kept hearing these, like, all right, something's obviously going on with this black triangle thing. I mean, when you, that night that you saw it, was there, like, did it see, like, seem like anything was chasing it, or like it was being followed, or I guess, what's the phrase?
I can pretty confidently say that there wasn't really anything following it. It was just, like I said, very slow and methodical across the horizon. It was close enough that I could see the formation of the lights. You could tell that it was something triangular. But past that, really, you couldn't tell anything. And as far as anything chasing it, I'm doubtful of that. Now, I was a teenager. I mean, well, you know, your memory goes bad over the years and everything. That's, but I'm pretty positive that there was nothing chasing it, that there was no other air traffic in the area. I mean, at that time, so I got used to seeing planes. You could hear a jet plane or a prop plane or something take off from the airport. We were close enough that the way that the landscape is and everything, foothills of the Appalachian Mountains. So sound traveled a long way. And actually at my home, if the weather was right, you could see the spotlight from the airport, which was a good 20 or 25 minute drive from my home. So again, weather conditions, if they were correct, I would have expected to hear a plane or something like that. And for a good 20 minutes, it was just dead silent from not only from the animals, but from anything that I could hear up in the sky as well. And that was the kicker.
It's definitely a feeling too. Like, you walk outside and you know, you feel it, like something is not right now. Especially, yeah, when everything is dead quiet, the animals, just nothing. And when you're living out where you said you were living out, like in the middle of a forest and there's nothing around, I mean, yeah, you're going to hear everything. So that's crazy.
Well, and especially at 4 in the morning. I mean, I can understand that it's strange if it happened at 4 in the morning. I mean, you shouldn't be kind of paranoid. You just shouldn't. Air traffic controllers aren't working then, are they, Kyle?
Yeah, that's correct. I kind of got the last half there for you of what you said there, John. I think it's cutting out a little bit on my end.
I said there aren't any air traffic controllers working at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, especially at a small little podunk airport where I can tell you this for a fact, the Statesville airport at that time only had really like NASCAR teams flying in and out of it. And this was, you know, middle of the week after the teams had already flew out. So the chance of there actually being a lot of air traffic out of that airport were pretty slim at that point. It was very much an interesting experience to put it lightly.
Right. And now, Kyle, I want to bring something up that you and I discussed one night in one of our many. You said that sometimes you would go out yard on a lot with a lawn chair, and you would sit there and lay back and relax and watch the air traffic patterns, and you got very familiar with them as they were going in and out of Charlotte, which is Douglas Airport, correct?
Yeah, where I was, it was close enough that you could tell some of the air traffic and everything. And if it was clear and you were at a high enough elevation, you could see the planes and everything coming out of Charlotte. Now, really, this was mainly at night. Get to the top of the mountain, look down, and there you see a couple of lights off in the distance. So you started to get the general idea of at least what direction the traffic from Charlotte came from. And then growing up next to the Statesville Airport, I knew almost every traffic pattern that came out of there. And save for a couple of small, single prop planes that you'd get people every now and then that would be practicing their stalls and everything like that in the middle, or was it, because we were in a big field, so you'd get the pilots that were learning, trying to log their hours and everything. You'd have them doing stuff overhead. So it got to the point where I got to become very familiar with all of the air traffic in the area and kind of what planes were around and everything. So I got to hear the sound, and it was one of those things where you kind of just, you spend so much time out there listening and staring at this, and you're just like, wait a sec, something's not right. And when it, it just kind of just flags it, and you're just like, ooh, something's off here.
Right, and those were some interesting calls that we had when you said, I could look up there and I could tell what was normal and what wasn't normal.
Mm-hmm. And to add on to that, John, I know you and I have had many a late night phone calls where discussing something absolutely just weird, and then I'm fairly certain on one or two of those, even you were like, what is that you're seeing? Because you see something, it doesn't follow a normal traffic pattern, and you're just like, huh. I feel like I remember being on a phone call with you one day, driving home from work super late at night, and running across something. And, oh, there go the fireworks. But
happy 4th of July.
Yeah. Yep, happy 4th, everybody. I remember one of them, John, was chatting with you, actually coming back, driving up from Charlotte. So this was actually closer to Charlotte Douglas. So I went to school in Charlotte and would commute back to Statesville just during the night and everything. I'd work, go to school, I'd come home. And this was roughly, I think, 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I remember you and I were chatting on the phone. The weather was just very, very weird this night. It was cloudy and thundering and just very, very strange. I was coming up I-77 going north, and I think I was somewhere just outside of Charlotte, like in the Huntersville area, which Charlotte Douglas. So at that point, you're close enough to a big regional airport, or not regional, you'd say you're close enough to a major airport that you should start seeing some air traffic. You should start seeing some planes coming in to land and everything. The clouds were so thick that you couldn't really, you couldn't see anything. Every now and then there was a break in the cloud and you might see something. But coming up through there, and I remember being on the phone with you, and I ended up seeing a string of lights. It was like five lights in a row that went behind, they went into a cloud bank. And then they were bright enough that they actually shone through the cloud bank before they kept going. Now, mind you, I'm traveling 70 miles an hour up the interstate, chatting on the phone with you. But, when you crane your neck and you have to stop and you're just like, did I just see something? At that point, a plane's marker light that they were coming in to land really were – what I'm looking for here. They're not going to shine through a very thick cloud bank. That was one of the things that really, really kind of screwed with me there. And I'm sure you probably remember that call. I was a little bit speechless after that one.
Well, you were, and it was like, what is going on here? I mean, I see these John, there are five lights, and something like that. I said, well, that's interesting. I mean, I didn't know what else to say. Well, that's very interesting. Glad you saw them. Glad you reported them. But, I mean, but it was like, what the heck is going on? And so it was interesting. I think the reason that I brought this up is you said, you know, I would lay out there. It would be midnight, 1 a.m., and I would be very familiar with the traffic patterns. But then all of a sudden there would be something that comes along that just didn't fit in with the traffic pattern going to Douglas Airport. And Douglas Airport's one of the largest airports in the country. So I'll tell you what, it was very strange to hear Kyle's commentary on it, because if you, those of you that are listening, here's what you do. Get you a lawn chair. Sit out at midnight every night for a couple of weeks, and you'll get used to the traffic patterns. Correct, Kyle?
That is correct.
And then all of a sudden, you'll start noticing things that aren't typical about the traffic patterns in the sky. And you'll say, well, what are those? You'll start following those. And I think that's what's interesting about just being a casual observer and looking for UFOs, because you'll see them, especially in and around a major airport. Now, Kyler, you're down there in Houston, and you're there. You've got two major, major airports. You've got Houston International, and you got Houston Hobby. Are you near either one of them?
I actually work about 10 minutes from Hobby Airport, and it's like I completely agree with you saying, you know, once you sit around it, you start to notice the patterns. And since I work outside, there's an app that we started to download because we'd see planes coming in. We'd start seeing lights everywhere. And, yeah, you just kind of look up. You can hear them go over your head. And we just get curious, and we start looking and seeing where the planes are going, how long the trip's going to be. And, like, if you can barely see it, and you're kind of curious, like, okay, I'm not sure what that is. You can look it up. It'll show you the pattern where it's going. So, yeah, just sitting out there it's a lot of fun just watching things flying around up there.
Well, you know, it really is. I mean, you've got a point there. It's a lot of fun watching things up in the sky. But when you start seeing crazy stuff, you're seeing something that is not normal. And you better start watching it very closely, because you don't know what the heck you're looking at. And that's kind of the fun. Now, I'm going to direct you, Kyler, to go spend $15, buy a lawn chair, sit out on your lawn at midnight every night for 2 weeks, and see if you don't start noticing some strange things going in and around Houston Hobby.
Oh, yeah, especially being here in Texas, of all places. I mean, there's UFO sightings and stuff happening here all the time.
Well, there are, and I mean, you know, your Houston Hobby, if I'm not mistaken, that is still the hub of Southwest Airlines, right?
I think so, yeah.
And it is like a madhouse there. I've flown in and out of there several times. It was a lot of fun. And it's like, you just don't know what you're going to see, which it's kind of cool. I mean, UFOs are out there. I don't care what people say. I have seen them. Kyle has seen them. I don't know, Kyler, if you've seen them or not, but they're out there. And it's very interesting, and you got to be careful now. In fact, I just got an article, said 15 sites that evidence that people from Kentucky have been visited by UFOs. And there are a ton of sightings in Kentucky. And I would say probably it rivals a little bit what you guys have in Texas, because, I mean, of course, we have the major sightings in Texas, which are, well, Aurora, 1897. We've got the Lubbock Lights, which were huge. That was a huge deal in the 1960s. And then, of course, we have the Marfa Lights, which nobody knows what the heck that is. It is maybe related to the Brown Mountain Lights in Burke County, North Carolina, where I grew up. And it's just, you know, you never know, but there's so many great sightings in Texas, especially in Houston and the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So I mean, you know, just if you want to, get a lounge chair, one of those $15 chairs from the dime store, and sit out and watch. There's no telling what you'll see even within a week. Even if you want to get out there from 10 to 11 at night, because I know if you're like me, you have to get up and go to work early. Correct, Kyler?
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, just getting up there, out there, even 10 or 11 at 10 to 11 at night, you'll start noticing traffic patterns and all that. So, I mean, it's just very, very interesting. And Kyle, I'd say this has been a great story. First of all, I do want to say thanks to the people at WLSC AM and FM, Loris, Conway, Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, for having ScaryCast on there. WLSC AM and FM, Loris, Conway, and Myrtle Beach, the home of Banana Jack in the Morning, and the home of Little Town Big Talk from 10 a.m. to noon, starring Banana Jack Murphy, and, of course, Marshall Biddle, my buddy. So, in fact, they have me on there about once a week, and I get to talk about paranormal stuff. I don't have to. I love talking about it. So, got to say thanks to everybody on that. And that's our bottom of the hour station break. And now back to you, Kyle. You said you had another story that would be of interest to us.
So, this next one actually very much more recent. John, I actually don't know if I've told you this one. And I've actually done quite a fair bit of research on it that I can confidently say I actually saw something unexplained. So back in about mid-2020, this is around May or June, if I'm remembering correctly, I've since went through about two cell phones. So, you know, if you don't transfer all your data, you kind of lose everything. But it happened in the summer of 2020. And if, you know, assuming that your memory is halfway decent, there was a little something known as the COVID-19 lockdown. And pretty much all air travel that was non-essential was grounded. So you all of a sudden got to see the skies with, you know, little to no air traffic. And where I live now, I live in the Denver, North Carolina area, which is, it's south of Hickory, it's northwest of Charlotte. And every day I see planes coming overhead. It's, you know, the Charlotte Douglas is not that far away. It's maybe 20 or so miles, maybe 30 miles or something like that. But really, I'm in an area now where it's much more populous. There's not as much wilderness. I'm in a more suburban area where I live currently, and don't really expect to see anything. Well, middle of the COVID-19 lockdown with no air traffic going out, all of a sudden you would see things that you kind of would actually question again. And, you know, not thinking anything of it. This is about the time when, you know, commercial drones are starting to hit the market in, like, en masse. You're starting to see videos on the internet of people rehearsing drone swarms, and you started to see the advertising using drone formations and everything, like videos out of China and Japan. At the time, you know, all the stuff with SpaceX was absolutely huge. Starlink was going up, and, you know, as it still is today. But basically, what had happened on this night, I can confidently say, was an unexplained UFO. Because I'm driving home from work, and I was maybe only 5 minutes from my house. Which, again, this is a fairly suburban area. There's two stoplights until you get into the main portion of town. I live on the outskirts. And this is the best way to say it is that if you want to look on a map, this is the Anderson Mountain area of North Carolina, which this is near a place called Mountain Creek. This is right outside of Maiden, North Carolina, which is north of Lincolnton. I said, anybody who's familiar with the map, at least, you know, they should know where it is. This is near Highway 321, near Highway 85. You're on major thoroughfares, so it's not like this is an out east Podunk area. And so I'm driving home. It's just a regular night. It's probably, I think, like, because I work third shift. So I think I had picked up a shift that was like 1 or 2 a.m. or something like that when I was coming home. And I'm passing a church, and I look, and I see a group of somewhere between 15 and 20 light that were legitimately below the cloud line. Now, it was not a clear night, but it was very hazy. There were some clouds, there were some breaks in the clouds. But I saw this grouping of lights going across in front of me. And like, what the hell is that? So I pulled my car off and I stopped in this church parking lot. I said, I'm 5 minutes from my home. And I get out of my car and I watched these lights move. And it didn't look like they were drones or anything like that, because the sheer distance that they were covering from the time that I first spotted them, the time I pulled off, got out of the car, took my phone out, tried to record a video, but, you know, having a really cheap smartphone doesn't do anything if you try and record something, especially at night. And so, unfortunately, the lights were too dim to actually show up on the camera footage. But you could see it clear as day with your own naked eye. I'm watching them. What the hell? And so they're starting to go past the trees. And so I hop back in the car. I got nothing going on. Hop back in the car, and I turn around, and I follow them down the road. So I followed them for around 3 to 5 miles, end up getting to one of the roads that's kind of on the top of Anderson Mountain. It's not necessarily on the top of the mountain, but one of the higher points that's at least easily accessible. You know, there's still homes around and anything like that. And I get to this area, and I pull the car off, and I stop, and I park the car in a ditch, and I climb out, and I'm watching. And I follow this grouping of lights as they're just going across. And at this point, I'm on the top of a very, very large hill. There's a valley down below. There's, you know, there's the homes and everything like that. But the distance that they covered, I covered that in maybe only between 2 and 5 minutes. I could be wrong on how many miles I drove there, but I didn't have to drive very far in the car to get to this high point. I stood there and I'm watching this grouping of lights, and my first thought immediately is that this is a drone swarm. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. I've never seen one of these. This is super cool. And, well, I thought it was a drone swarm until the lights started blinking out one at a time. And so it went from about, I would say, like 18 lights or so down to 15, 12. And then there was like, I want to say, 8 left. At that point, it was the absolute strangest thing, because it looked like that they blinked out of existence. The distance that they covered, I've somewhat dabbled in remote control stuff. Now, I've done stuff with remote control vehicles. I can't exactly say that I'm super up to speed on everything that commercial drones can do now, but the sheer amount of distance that they covered in a short span of time, it was like, okay, you would have to be up at a very, very high area, or you'd have to have a receiver very, very good if you wanted that to actually be a drone swarm. But anyway, at this point, it was like 8 lights, and they started blinking out one by one. And the last one finally blinked out. And, like, I was basically, when I first watched these things, it was like they were right over my car. I would estimate maybe 500 to 1,000 feet. I didn't hear anything. And at that point, I was like, what the hell? And this one legitimately has left me speechless to this day. And so I got looking, because I've seen the SpaceX Starlink satellite chain. I've seen things through my telescope that I can't explain and that eventually look up later and find out, okay, well, that satellite flew over. Oh, those, that chain of lights that I saw, that was Starlink. Well, I did some looking, and Starlink was on the other side of the planet at the time that I saw these things. And so that took out my two prevailing theories there. And then I actually did take it a step further, and I tried to report this through NewFork, the National UFO Reporting collection or something like that. I don't remember what it stands for. But I tried to report it through there, and not going to try and say that there was something fishy, but every time I tried, it wouldn't let me. So I'm not going to sit here and say that it was a conspiracy, but there was a little something going on there. So, and I ended up looking on that, on their database, from the limited access I had, I was able to find a couple of reports actually that were from my area, that were in like the Huntersville area or in the Charlotte area, of the same, like of a similar grouping of lights at that same, like around that same time, all of this within an hour. Like there were like one or two sightings I was able to find the database. I said, unfortunately, I've lost the data that said specifically what time and what date this, I said it was either May or June of 2020. And I have a very, very large feeling that those other two sightings that I had found a while back, I had a feeling that maybe I had seen the same craft, the same unexplainable phenomena. And honestly, that was the one that really, like, I've always tried to be a very rational thinker. I know that there are things that I can't explain. I know that there are powers that are beyond my comprehension out there. I'm a believer in that. But when you sit there and you watch something like that happen, and you're just questioning everything about your reality, like, it really shook me to the core. And every time I talk about this, I get a really weird feeling. And it's like part of it is joy and part of it is like, day, you have no idea what it is. This is the one finding that has actually like probably impacted me more than anything else. And I haven't seen anything like that since. This was 2 years ago. And, you know, and as the lockdown restrictions ended, you got to see more air traffic. And I can 100% guarantee that from what I saw and the distance that it was above the ground was really not anything that even you'd see a helicopter or a small commercial plane or anything like that. The only thing I could see even remotely close would be a bunch of drones. But how are you going to get close to 20 drones to cover a distance that, that fast in that amount of time? You would have to basically be on top of the mountain, I would assume. But
you would have to be somewhere from a vantage point. You're exactly right. And let me ask you this, Kyle. That's an interesting enough story. I would like to come up there and let you take me to that location, so we could take some pictures and I could get my artist to draw maybe what you saw and put that in the third edition of Look Up in the Sky. Kind of fits the title, Look Up in the Sky. But
I would be totally willing to. This is the one thing I've told a handful of people, and it's, if you tell someone that instead they're going to be a skeptic. I mean, they're going to say, "Oh, you're a whack job, you're a crackpot." And I might be a little whack, but I mean, who isn't these days? But I was sober. I chased things for at least a couple of miles. I mean, I know what I saw was something I can't explain, and at that point, it goes out of the realm of, this is something that I can explain to oh my God, this is, for some stupid reason, this feels like a life-changing event. And it makes you question it, everything.
Well, obviously you saw something that you couldn't explain. I have done that before. Kyler, what do you think about what the story that Kyle has just told us? And have you ever seen anything that you couldn't explain? So a two-part question for you, Kyler.
I haven't, that I can remember. I haven't seen anything that absolutely insane before. And when I say insane, I mean unexplainable. Because, I mean, you were telling the story, and I was sitting here like, I don't even know what I would do. I'm, like, speechless right now. I don't even know what to think. I don't know what questions to ask, because I'm like, rolling it back in my head, trying to picture what you saw, and I got nothing. I mean, I would just be frozen and questioning what to do.
That's precisely what I did. I mean, I got out of my car and I stood there, and I stood there in a fully lit church parking lot watching these things go across the sky, and it was like, I don't know if they stopped at one point or not, but I had at least 5 minutes of standing there just staring up, questioning what the heck it was, and then I made the split-second decision to follow them when they went across the horizon. In Joe, okay, rational thinker would probably be like, oh, no, don't do that. Well, I'm not really a rational thinker then.
Well, that's always the thing, too. You see something you can't really, you just can't automatically, you know, something comes up like, oh, that's a plane. Oh, that's whatever it is. So you just leave it alone and go home. But you stopped and you went to follow it, too. Like the amount of interest and curiosity to get you to actually do that makes me, like, obviously you saw something.
Yeah, I can 100% say that it was unexplained. And the, like I said, the fact that I was able to find something in one of the databases in a public, at least somebody just filling out an anonymous thing online in the general area, saying that they saw a grouping of lights, you know, at least an hour or two before I saw anything, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're connected, but that's a pretty strong coincidence.
Right. Yeah. Even if I was one of those people who's like, you know what, there's no such thing as UFOs, blah, 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 I don't believe you, it was just drones. You can tell, I mean, even from here, if it was 18 to 20 drones, that would be some pretty loud noise above your head that you would definitely be able to tell. And I'm pretty sure you said there was no sound.
Yeah, there was absolutely no sound. And they were, I would estimate, anywhere between 500 and 1,000 feet above. And now, I don't know if you could even hear that many drones up above you. But just the sheer fact that it was silent lends me enough credence that I saw something unexplained. And I would totally class that as a UFO or a UAP, whatever you want to use for the term.
So you said,
I'm going to be old-fashioned, and I'm going to call it a UFO sighting. I mean, that's what it is, unidentified flying objects. I mean, anyway, back to you, Kyler. I'm sorry I had to jump in with that comment.
No, you're fine. I was going to say earlier, Kyle, you said that they either disappeared or shot off, and I can't remember exactly what you said.
I don't know how to describe it. It was like, my assumption is that it looked like they kind of blinked out of existence. And that was the kicker, that I had no freaking clue of even what to do there. It wasn't like they faded out slowly or anything. It was just,
right.
it was like a snap of your fingers and half of them were gone. And that's what I couldn't wrap my head around. It was, they blinked out of existence, and it was like they're there 1 second and they're gone the next. It's like, did they shoot off? I don't know. Did they disappear? Obviously. But it's just one, I really just have no explanation for it. And I can hear just say the best way to describe it for me is that it looked like they just up and disappeared. They went poof, gone.
All right. Well, now standing there watching that.
Well, here's what we're going to do, Kyle. We're going to get some pictures. Now, how remote is this Anderson Mountain area?
Not remote at all. Not remote at all. It's a very, very populous area. Now, it's not super duper dense, but it's still in the foothills of North Carolina. You know, we are where the Anderson Mountain area is. This is in Maiden, North Carolina. This is only maybe 45 minutes from where the Brown Mountain lights are. I know you were talking about the Marfa lights earlier.
Where I grew up, yeah. No, I know exactly.
So,
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yep. It's the same exact similar area. There's where I'm located, where I first saw them, is a stone's throw off of Lake Norman, which, you know, largest man-made lake in North Carolina. You know, north of Charlotte, the Mooresville area. There's a lot of people that live around there. So it's not like this was in the middle of nowhere. This is a very populous area, but the things that just give credence to it for me is that this happened in the middle of the lockdown, where you had no air traffic out, and then this happened in the middle of the night. Now, I was the only car on the road. So really just at that point, yeah, it's – I'm probably talking in circles now, but that is – precisely what I'm getting at is that it's not like this is a remote area, but the circumstances were just perfect that there was nothing else going on. And you can say that it's fishy. You can say that it, you know, that I'm making it up. I am 100% swearing my hand on the Bible. I have never seen anything like that. And just talking about it, it's making me excited. It's making me giddy because I can't explain it. And that's one of the things that I love being able to tell this story and to people who are actually willing to listen, because most of the time when I tell this, people are just like, oh, you're full of shit. That's nothing. And just to be able to experience it is a whole different story. And I'm sure, Kyler, I'm sure you're exactly the same way.
Oh, I think people just, you know, they'll start saying that because they don't want to think about it themselves, and it scares them. So, yeah, I don't care. I mean, obviously, I've believed them in a long time.
And Kyle, I've got an important question for you. Do you have a couch I can sleep on when I'm coming up there?
Yes, I have a pull-out couch, and I have a cot. You can take your pick.
I'll just sleep on the couch with a blanket, and I'm fine. But no, I'll come up there on a Saturday and return on a Sunday. We'll all go. I'm sure there's a wonderful place to eat brunch up there, but we'll go up there on a Saturday night and see what we can see. We'll get up there early enough so that I can take some pictures so that my artist can draw a sketch of the Anderson Mountain. And then if you can sketch out what these lights look like, I'll have him put together something for Look Up in the Sky 3rd Edition that I think will be kind of fabulous. I mean, it'll be a great story, something that a lot of people haven't heard. So, I mean, just very excited that you wanted to share that with us. I mean, this is kind of an interesting thing. And by the way, we are fortunate enough to have the King of West Hollywood, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight, Devin?
Well, I'm doing just fine. How about you?
We're doing pretty good.
Doing?
So what you been up to?
Well, I went over to Skin, what's the name of that ranch? Oh, damn. Oh, the one that's in the...
Where are you? Say that again.
That ranch, you know, the one that has that TV series all about it. I went over there and did some probing.
Oh, Skinwalker
and,
Ranch.
There you go.
Skinwalker Ranch. How is that?
That was terrific. I saw so many ghosts pointing their plasma guns at me, I couldn't believe it. I had to get the hell out of there before that film did the thing, because I was scarier than a rabbit. I'm telling you, man, you don't want to go to no Skinwalker Ranch. Tell you that right now.
Well, I know I don't. I'm sorry for saying this, but I don't want to go out there myself.
Yeah, I got another conspiracy for you.
What's that?
I'm not Devlin. I don't know who the hell Devlin is, but I figured since you were going to say, since you said, here's Devlin, but I put on a good old Southern accent.
Yeah, because you're calling from the same area code.
Oh, yeah? Oh, okay. But in any case, I came here to find out about any UFOs. I think a lot of people believe in UFOs. Now, I'd like to know, what are the conspiracies that your show's about? Are they conspiracies regarding aliens, UFOs, interdimensional beings, or what?
No, they are true stories about interdimensional beings, aliens, and everything else. We only deal with true stories, and we have an old buddy of mine, Kyle Peckham, who's just told two great stories about UFOs that he has seen in the last year in the middle of the COVID thing, and it was near Charlotte, North Carolina. So that's all. We don't deal with conspiracies here. We're one of the only shows that deals with reality, and I know that's kind of an interesting, odd thing, but that's exactly what we do. So,
reality is what is what I'd like to be interested in. So, of course, you know, you say you're dealing with people who have told you the true stories. So they actually have either audio proof or video proof or pics of the of the UFOs or whatever they've seen.
Well, let's put it this way: when we have our stories and we talk about them, experiencer stories are by and large true stories, and that's what we deal with.
Uh huh. So, just like Devlin, right? So, in other words, if somebody comes on your show and says he saw UFO plant its light on his car, pick his car up, turn it around, flip it over, and flew it back the other way without any audio proof, video proof, or pictures or confirmation by eyewitnesses, just because he says so, that makes it true?
That makes it truer than not. It really does, because when people, well, in our experience, when people have stories, it's different than when they don't. And that's an interesting thing about this entire paranormal business, is when someone has a story, it's more than likely, it's probably 60 to 70% true, because they wouldn't go to the trouble to do this. I mean, just, you know, I hate to tell you this, but people are lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And Kyle, do you agree people are lazy in general sometimes?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. I can tell you for a fact, John, that the last story I've told you, the few people I've told this to have looked at me like I've had three heads. Really, the only person that has believed me has been my wife, because she's looked at me and like, well, he I came home and she's like, oh, you're shook up. And I wasn't the same person for a few days. And like I said, I really wish that, like I said, I made the attempt to try and record my sighting and everything. But when you have such an entry-level smartphone, an Android, you know exactly how that goes, terrible camera quality aside. And then if you've got something that's off in the distance, unless it's super bright light, you're just not going to see it. And that's pretty much what happened. I had footage of me talking about this UFO as I watched it, but even with video editing software, you could go in, you could look at it, and you couldn't see a damn thing. Is the camera was just so low quality that you couldn't tell anything. And again, this was 2 years ago. I've since went through two cell phones. So unless you transfer everything, you know, how are you going to be able to go back and get that? I've got chat logs from, like, texting friends a couple days after. saying, hey, I saw something. Can I talk to you about it? I need an ear. I need someone to listen. Let me ramble. And it's one of those things where you're just like, I might not have the proof, but I've got the experience. And I know damn well that I saw something I can't explain. And for me, whether or not whoever's listening believes me or not, they want to call me a whack job, 100%. You have the total right to do that. I'm a very, very skeptical person myself. But that night, I saw something I truly couldn't explain.
Well, here's the thing about evidence. Here's the funny thing about evidence. When people talk about their experiences, they could be telling 100% of what happened. They could be completely and accurate about whatever it is that they experienced. But without proof, people who have not been there cannot and should not believe just whatever anybody says. When you say people are lazy, absolutely, except when it comes to attention and glory. A lot of people who have nothing else going on in their lives love to make up stories. It doesn't even matter if the story makes them look like an idiot, as long as they got the attention.
Yeah, except I've known Kyle far too long.
I'll go ahead and I'll say that you've got a point. Now, I've got for me, I ain't got really anything to lose. I'm happily married. I work a comfortable job. I work at a factory on third shift. I mean, I'm kind of up at all late night hours and everything. I've been interested in watching the skies since I was a kid. I've had a heavy interest in astronomy, so I'm at least somewhat familiar with kind of the general things that go on in the skies and everything. And like I said, if you don't want to believe what I say, take it at face value, that is 100%. You have every right for that. And I can't even argue against that.
But I know what I saw,
and that's not going to – and what someone's opinion of that isn't going to change what I say.
Well,
you know,
some strange things too.
I want to bring something up that I don't really talk a lot about. But when I was in graduate school at North Carolina State University, I spent 3 years as a research associate at the Ryan Institute of Parapsychology. That was headed at that time by Dr. Sally Ryan Feather, whose father was J.B. Ryan, who invented the term ESP. And Dr. Sally Ryan Feather and I would sit there, and she would get so many stories sent in to her about ESP experiences. And I asked her the same question. I said, Sally, you know, some of these are really detailed, really interesting stories. What makes you think that they're all true? And she said, you know, John, in my experience, if someone goes to the trouble to relay an experience, I pretty much want to believe it because they took the time to do it. In fact, Dr. Sally Ryan Feather, gave me the notion of people are lazy, and too many people aren't going to want to spend their time relaying a story because we live in a world where people are lazy. They just really are. And it made sense to me. She's a clinical psychologist with a PhD from Duke, and she had a particular perspective that brought her 2 best-selling books on the New York Times bestseller list about these things. One was called The Gift, and the other one was called The Gift Part 2. And whenever she would get written stories, or like I've known Kyle for so long, I mean, I know that Kyle doesn't lie. He just doesn't. I mean, he's truly one of the more trustworthy people that I know. So when somebody that I know tells me a story like this, I'm liable to believe them because of their history with me.
And because of the relationship that you've got with them. Yeah, I understand that.
Kyler is also on the call too. And if Kyler, because I've known Kyler for a while, and if Kyler comes up with a story, then I'm probably going to believe it because I know him. I've got experience with him. And so most of the folks that I deal with I have known for a while.
And I understand that from your perspective, but I believe in trust but verify. I'm also one who believes, if you guys have ever heard of Randy the Magician, for over 20 years.
Oh, are you talking about the unamazing Randy, who is a charlatan?
No, he's not a charlatan.
Okay. I've investigated him, and, you know, unamazing Randy.
What has he done? He's offered $1 million to anybody who could prove with under controls that whatever they claim. If you have ESP, if you have telepathic powers, if you're a clairvoyant, come on in. It's $1 million. Nobody's ever been able to claim it. People have said, though, well, his conditions are too rigid. Like what? You stay in a room. Somebody else stays in another room, you read their mind. Oh, no, I can't do it. The lights are too bright. The audio is too loud. All kinds of nonsense. Now, I'd be interested to find out from you, since you investigated them, what kind of fraud has he perpetrated on the public?
What he's done is he produced that book, and I forget the name of it. I've got it over there on my bookshelf. He produced that book, and what he did was he made everybody that has ever had an experience look like a fraud, which is incorrect. I mean, I have had experiences myself. I mean, you can't always determine when someone's going to have an extrasensory perception experience. You really can't, because it's not something that can be done under controlled experiment, because it's not something.
That's not what he says. From what I understand, that's not what he says.
It's not repeatable.
I understand where you're going with that. And I believe that people who do have ESP, maybe they don't have it every day. Maybe they just experience it every once in a while, whenever
that
power is real, when it comes. However, he tests people who say, I've got ESP and I'll prove it. Okay, come on over. Come on down. Prove it.
Anyone
and then
who
when
says that doesn't have it, because they realize ESP is a fairly transient thing. It's not something that is subject to the standard scientific method. It's not. It's like sometimes you get it, sometimes you don't, and that's just the way it is. He makes it sound like it's something that you can just do on the spot and you can snap your fingers. It doesn't work like that.
I don't know if he says that, but the people that he has tested, he has shown that they have not proven what they say they're going to prove. They put themselves on trial in order to show the whole world that they've got whatever particular gift that they're supposed to have. When they are in controlled circumstances, and they're not beyond reason, and they can't do it, for 20 years, nobody's been able to get that $1 million. Hey, you know what? You can be as lazy as hell. But for $1 million, a lot of people are not going to be lazy.
Well, a lot of people are going to claim something that they can't do, because the people that can really do it aren't going to go prove themselves for $1 million, because they know that sometimes they can't and sometimes they can. And that's a fact. I mean, even the great remote viewers, Joe McMonagle and Ingo Swann and Russell Targ, they even said sometimes they just can't get it right. It's like, you know, when you're up there, when you're a concert pianist, sometimes you do a great job, sometimes you don't, and you try as hard as you can both times. Sometimes you do a great performance, and sometimes you don't. ESP is more like an art form.
Yeah.
It's more like an art form than it is a call on demand.
But that's why people go and say to him in the world, I can do it, or I've been like these preachers of the mega churches who said that they can diagnose and cure diseases. I forget the guy's name. It's not Randy. Somebody else has proven that a couple of these people set up their parishioners in order to fool the world. They were fraudulent. So ESP is one thing, but if you're going to be a telepathic, right, you're going to be somebody who says, well, I can read minds, and then you don't do it. Now, you say, hey, it only comes on an ethereal basis, right, periodically. Hell, all you got to do is just say, you know what, I'll put you up I'll put myself up in a hotel for 30 days. When the time comes, I'll be able to prove to you when it comes that I know what I'm doing. What I'm doing is accurate. What I'm doing is right. And for what? $5,000 that 1 month for a room? I get $1 million? Why not? Nobody's won it.
Well, from the psychics that I know that are real, they wouldn't do that to begin with because they know that they are fallible. And it's like anything else. It's an art form. You're always correct. But anybody that would say that they can do it all the time is lying. And I can tell you that. So,
Sure. That's where probabilities come in. If you can do it, the chances are, if you're in a room, and you're right across the bench from me, okay? We're at a table. There's a glass between you and me. And I say to you, okay, I've got 5 cards. Tell me which card I'm looking at now. And I do 5 of them in a row. And you do consistently 3 out of 5. You just might have ESP. The area of probabilities is what's very important.
Actually, for that to be statistically reliable, you would have to do more than 3 out of 5 because there's not enough difference between 2.5 and 3. And that's where I would say you're wrong, and that's why you do have to use science when you judge it. But that's why a lot of folks that do have ESP know that it's not always reliable. Probably one of the greatest psychics.
Yeah,
well,
what do you mean between 2.5 and 3? If I've got 5, let's say 10 cards, to make it a very probabilistic challenge, I got 10 cards, and I have the numbers 1, 25, 815 on the cards, 1,000, 40, et cetera. Now, what do you mean between 2.5 and 3? I don't understand that.
If you're doing an average, you should get an average of 50% right, and you would not use cards like that. You use Zener cards, which are kind of the standard. And I'm just saying that there's a lot that goes into this, but we're not really into discussing that. We're talking about experience with cards.
Right.
That's kind of our thing. So I mean, sometimes maybe we can talk about
no problem.
And we can chat about it.
No problem.
Okay.
No problem.
But look, thank you, and we really appreciate you calling in, and please call back again. I think it'd be great, and we appreciate it.
No.
So anyway, Mr. Kyle, I'm going to give you and Kyler the last words. Kyle, give us your last word on this whole experiencer thing, and you are definitely going to get me up there to Anderson. It's Anderson Mountain, correct?
Yes, it's the Maiden, North Carolina area. I said we're less than an hour drive from where the Brown Mountain lights are. So you already have an idea of what has historically went on in this area. But
right,
I just
come up to Charlotte and make a left, basically.
Exactly. And as far as any last words, I said,
yep.
For me, being the experiencer in this, I will 100% say that if someone doesn't believe me, they have every right to. I'm not going to sit here and tell someone that they're wrong, that I'm right, that it's my way or the highway. I'm not going to say that. They didn't see the same things I did. So a rational mind is going to say exactly that. Well, show me proof. And really, the best way to say that is this happened so long ago, I will straight up say, I have no proof of this other than my word. And you can take that at face value. And
well, it's interesting.
Point,
Dr. Sally Linefeather built a career on experiencer stories, and she built a number one New York Times bestseller on experiencer stories. So I worked with her. And hers is the methodology that I believe. So just know that that's where I'm coming from, and I certainly believe you because I've known you too long to know that you don't make stories up. You know, there's a truth factor with you that I have that I don't have with other people just because I don't know who they are. Now, Kyler, what is your last word here? And then I'll give us the last word on ScaryCast for this evening.
All I have to say is I need to go get a lawn chair because, you know, the more we talk about it, the more I just want to go sit outside and watch and see what happens.
Absolutely. And by the way, you need a log of what you see that is normal and what you see that is odd or not normal. And that's the best way, you know, collecting data is an important thing. So, you know, just get a notebook. They're $1.99 and get a notebook and jot down what's going on. And you'll be amazed at the collection of data that you will get. You know?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got my camera on my phone. That it'll work. I mean, I don't know how well it'll work at night because, of course, you know, Kyle knows we have Androids. They're not the greatest still. But, hey, I'll work with what I got, and we'll see what happens.
That's exactly right. Well, we'll all be collecting data because I'm going to be up there in Anderson Mountain collecting some data with Kyle. It'll be a lot of fun. And the real last word is the ScaryCast word is that we've enjoyed having Kyle on here to tell these two stories. They're very interesting, and we're going to go back out with him. We're going to do some drawings, let people know what we come up with. They'll be in, you can be guaranteed this will be in the third edition of Look Up in the Sky, Aliens, UFOs, and Bigfoot. It's going to be a lot of fun. And next week on ScaryCast, we will have the one and only John LeMay, the most prolific paranormal author in the country. And we're going to be talking about his new book. And he's got just a couple of other great stories for us. The reason he was not on tonight, he was going to be on with Kyle. But this is the end of the Roswell UFO. It's a Comic-Con. It's a four-day Comic-Con or a four-day exhibit, and today was the last day. And he said, John, I'm going to be at my best for 4 days. I don't think that I can handle doing a ScaryCast at night. I said, so then do you want to do it the next week? He said, certainly. So John LeMay will be with us next week. And then on the 18th, the third Monday night of the month, we are going to have the amazing Elijah Henderson. His father was the premier researcher at Land Between the Lakes up there in Kentucky, and he will be with us to tell us some stories, and they're going to be pretty much phenomenal. So everybody do not miss that, Elijah Henderson from Land Between the Lakes, and he's from just the very northernmost part of Tennessee, and he's got some great stories for us. So I want to say, Kyle, thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me on, John. And Kyle, it's been nice being able to chat with you.
Yeah, and we'll get up with you as soon as you and I go out there. We take pictures, and I get those to the artist to get him to draw them so that everyone can see them. Kyler Smith, as usual, it was great having you as a co-host.
Yeah, thank you, John, and thank you, Kyle. It was great to hear your stories and get on here and talk with you guys.
All right, guys, I'll be doing the call around right after the show, and we'll see everybody next week. Same bat time, same bat channel. Oh, my goodness, there we go with the bats. But we know what I mean. ScaryCast, the one and only, 9 p.m. Eastern on Monday nights. Take care. We'll see everybody next week. Have a good one.